Okay, everyone, good evening, and welcome back. It's good to be back for our class. I hope everybody had an enjoyable Pesach. It was definitely a different Pesach than any of us probably have ever had in our lives. But Baruch Hashem, we could all still be here right now together, healthy, learning together. And the Mirz Hashem, our learning should be a merit or a refuah shleima for all those who need a refuah shleima. And it'd be a merit that the Rebbeinu Shalom rescues us from this difficult situation very soon. Okay, so this week's parasha is a double parasha, Achrei Mois and Kedoshim, Tavshin Pei. And we're going to have a thought on each parasha, starting with a thought on parashas Achrei Mois, and then a thought on parashas Kedoshim. So we will begin in parashas Achrei Mois, Perek Yudches Pasuk Gimel. Which is chapter 18, verse 3. To be honest with you, I don't have an art scroll in front of me in case you didn't tell the exact page. But again, it's Perek Yudches, chapter 18, verse 3. In case for some reason no one can hear me, just because I'm moving away from the computer, just let me know. Okay, so Perek Yudches, Pasuk Yudimel, chapter 8, verse 3 reads, Kamasi Eretz Mitzrayim Shel Yishavtem Bo Lo Yisasu, like the actions, like the practices of the land of Egypt in which you live, Loisasi, you shall not do. Uchamasi Eretz Canaan, and like the actions of the land of Canaan, Ashrani Meli Eschem Shema, that I am bringing you there too, Loisasi, you shall not do. Uchukaisem Loiselechu, nor shall you follow their laws. Okay, so here we have the Torah. Actually, this is a bit of the introduction to the laws of Arayas and the laws of the forbidden marriages, where the Torah tells us, do not copy the actions of the land of Egypt, do not copy the actions of the land of Canaan, and l'chakasem l'yiseleichu, you shall not follow in their laws. So now the question is, what exactly does it mean, l'chakasem l'yiseleichu, in their laws you shall not follow? And it's interesting to be, we should focus on the word uvechukaiseyam and in their laws. Because number one, the word uvechukaiseyam actually is used very often in a context of a mitzvah or a law that we don't understand the reason for it. That is what when we talk about a chok in regard to our mitzvahs of the Torah, a chok is a mitzvah that we don't know the reason for it. Here, we're not talking about laws of the Torah. We're talking about the laws or actions of the Egyptians and the Canaanites, and we call our laws chukaseyim. And let's take a look at how the Mefarshim explain this part of the pasuk, where it says, chukaseyim leiseylechu, then our laws you shall not follow, and see if in some way it fits into the context of chok as we use it regarding our mitzvahs, as to a mitzvah that we don't understand the reason behind it. Okay, so Rashi on the words of Uchukaisem Loiseleichu makes the following comment. What did the pasuk leave that wasn't yet said? Meaning, what exactly is Uchukaisem Loiseleichu when the Torah says, and in their laws you shall not follow? What's it coming to add? We just said, like the actions of the Egyptians and the Canaanites, he shall not copy. So what more is there to say? What more is being added by saying, you shall not walk in the laws? Rashi says, these are their social customs. Things that have become like laws to them. Such as theaters and the Safari translates itzadais as race courses. Going to theaters and going to amphitheaters where they had these animals racing against each other, these were things that Rashi calls the muses, social norms, but things that are hakukin, they have become like laws. There are these social norms that have become like laws. By these, the Canaanites and the Mitzrayim, they had these social norms that became so accepted, they were like laws. It was an expected thing that everybody did, perhaps at a certain time. In other words, the Torah is telling us, the way I understand, the Torah is not here talking about things that will be prohibited for us to do. like the illicit marriages that the Torah is going to mention. Rather, the Torah is, in this phrase, follow in their laws. Laws here means things that wouldn't be forbidden by our law, but it's their social norms. And they become such social norms that they're like their laws. That the Torah is warning us not to stay away from them. We cannot follow in those laws. So according to Rashi, it would seem that the word of the Chukaisayim, which means and their laws, doesn't have any connection to the meaning of chok, like we use in the context of our mitzvahs, of a commandment without an understanding. But as we see from here and perhaps from some other examples, using the word chok as law in this context perhaps means something that's not an official law, but it's been adopted by society to a point that it's like a law. It's such a societal norm that it's like a law. Everybody's got to do it. There was no official law about it, but it sort of was adopted as a law because it became an accepted practice, a social norm. So according to Rashi, v'chukaseim lo yiseleichu is a phrase that prohibits us to follow their social norms. And we use the word v'chukaseim not necessarily in the context of a law that has no understanding, but rather as something that's not officially a law, but rather something that's been taken as a norm, as if it's a law. Okay, that is how Rashi explains the words. The next comment I'd like to share with you comes from the Malbim. And the Malbim is actually working off a Safra. Safra is what we can call the Medrash, not a Medrash that deals with agadic lessons, with lessons about ethic and moral lessons, as much as it's the Medrash that deals with halachas, with laws. And on the words from the beginning of our pasuk that read, Kamasi Eretz Mitzrayim, Kamasi Eretz Kanan lo yisasu, you shall not do like the actions of the lands of Egypt, the lands of Canaan. I might think that when the Torah prohibits us from doing like the actions of Egypt, it means we cannot build buildings like them. We cannot plant the kind of trees like they plant. Therefore, the pasuk came to say, you shall not follow their chukim. What does that mean? Where I'm only referring to the kinds of laws that have been established for them and their fathers' fathers. And more the kinds of things that they did. In these countries, you had, and it was an established practice, a man marrying a man, a woman marrying a woman. A man can marry a woman and her daughter, and a woman can have two husbands. Therefore, the Torah tells us, what am I forbidding to you? I'm forbidding their chukim. Now, the Malbim is going to explain a little bit more what this means, but just to, again, repeat the safra. And the Malbim says this. The pasuk begins by saying, don't do like the actions of the Egyptians or the Canaanites. If it says don't do like their actions, that would imply anything that they do. The buildings that they make, the kind of plants that they plant, you can't do anything like that. The answer is no. You can't follow their chukim. And what falls under chukim? What the Safra calls things that were laws that were done by generations. And what kind of laws? Basically immoral and corrupt laws. The Malbim says on the words of the Chukaseim lo yiseleichu, you shall not follow their chukim. Ha-chukim heim animusim ha-koilelim ha-kvoyim b'medina. Chukim here means, similar to what we said before in Rashi, it means the cultural, the societal actions that were established in the country. Heim animusim ha-koilelim ha-kvoyim b'medina. General cultural norms that have been established in a country. The ruba me'im lahem tam. Most of them, people don't even know why they exist. The one who established it, he knows why. He had a reason for establishing it, and he knows why. But he never kind of passed it on to anyone. For years it's going on, and it's been lost why it was established. a Kava Merit Sinai, or the person who established it had a personal reason why he wanted to establish it, and he did. But at the end of the day, it's the societal norms, and nobody really knows why they're done. The Yan Shamik Masay Arts Mitzayim Leisas, Uchmasay Kailu Kal Pulishi Yatz Adam, Usherit Sainalay Mashayelcha Bukhukim Ahim Anishchas. So again, here the Ratan Albin says, the words Masay would have meant don't do anything, and at the end, it tells us the word Chukim, because again, Chukim doesn't mean any kind of action. It means some kind of a societal norm that's been established and nobody knows why. And that is referring to those kinds of societal norms or habits that are actually corruptive, like the kind of illicit marriages that are that the Sefra mentions and that are mentioned right afterwards when the Torah talks about the illicit marriages.
So is tradition an appropriate translation?
It's not any tradition.
No, of course, right.
It's not any tradition, but yes, tradition would be a good translation, yes. I'm using the word societal norms, but tradition also. Yeah. And again, tradition in the sense that, way the Malbim says, and just about to say this, you see, the Malbim does use the word chok here in the context of something that's ununderstandable. Because he says a lot of these traditions, nobody really knows why they were established. Only the person established them does. But the kinds of traditions that we're talking about are corruptive traditions. It's clear that we're talking about a style of buildings that they had that may have also been a tradition, why it happened that way, and nobody really knows why, then today it's not corrupted. So, but the Midrash is saying, basically, I would have thought any kind of tradition, any kind of action of theirs that they adopted, we cannot do. And the answer is no, it means it to not follow the kind of societal norms that are actually corrupted. How the word chukim includes the corruptive kinds, I'm not sure exactly. Maybe it's just kind of the fact that the pasuk mentions two things, actions and chukim, maisim and chukim. The two things are what let us know that we're not talking about any kind of tradition, but rather very specific kinds, and the kinds that we're about, that the Torah is just about, are the kinds that follow that we call arayas, the illicit marriages that are forbidden for us, and for some reason became social norms within those societies. But here we do find that the Malbim used the word, the Kukaseyim, to mean things that were established without a reason. I'd like to share with you now another explanation for using the word chok. Again, to use when talking about these societal norms, these traditions of these countries, why was the word chok used, the word that has a connotation for an action that we don't understand the reason for it? This explanation comes from Rabbi Mordechai Kamenetsky in his book, Four Parsha Parables. And as he does, whenever he gives an explanation, he attaches a story to it. And perhaps you remember this story for me, but here's how the story goes. And I'm going to read it to you straight from the book. The story is told, could be true, about a Talmudic scholar who was traveling by train from Philadelphia to Harrisburg. The man had a beard, long dark coat, and large wide-brimmed black hat. After placing his bags over his seat, he sat down next to a well-groomed businessman who looked at him scornfully. For the first 20 minutes of the trip, the secular gentleman kept eyeing the student as if he wanted to tell him something. Finally, the businessman could no longer contain himself. With passion in his voice, the man began to shout, "You know, I'm sick and tired of Jews who think they are still in the Middle Ages. You are a disgrace. I'm Jewish too. I even speak Yiddish. But do I wear a black coat? Do I let my beard grow? Must I wear an oversized hat? No. Why do you wear those clothes? Why do you wear that beard? Why do you need that hat? It's time you woke up and joined the modern world, the world of America." The startled student looked at his accuser quizzically. In a perfect Pennsylvanian accent, he began to speak. "Jewish?" he queried. "Excuse me, sir. I'm Amish. And I'm on my way back home from a visit with relatives in Philadelphia. I'm sorry if I offended you with my style of dress, but this is part of our heritage and culture. It was passed from our families in Europe to our families here in Lancaster. I'm sorry if I've disturbed you." The the businessman's face turned ashy. "I'm awfully sorry," he said contritely. "I did not mean what I said. In fact, I think it's wonderful that you maintain your heritage, culture, and tradition with such enthusiasm. It shows courage, fortitude, and commitment. Please forgive me. I was truly insensitive."
That's a beautiful story.
Suddenly, a wide smile broke across the young man's face. In perfect Yiddish, he asked the reeling traveler one simple question. "For the Gentile, it's wonderful. For the Jew, it's a disgrace." Rabbi Kamenetsky uses this story to bring out the following point. And that is that apparently, if something is to some people, if something looks strange, odd, very old-fashioned, middle-aged, if it's on a Jew, not acceptable. If it's not on a Jew, oh, it's beautiful. And as he writes, you have many people, he writes, "I have met scholars who have studied the sociological nuances of Zulu tribes and have never devoted more than elementary level of study to their own heritage. Thousands of unaffiliated college students who buy recordings of Gregorian chants are still circumspect in regard to listening to the incantations of the study of Talmud." So the point that he wants to bring is, the point that he wants to say is that when the Torah is telling us of the chukim, don't follow their chukim, it's referring to things that don't have an understanding. It's actually referring to things that may not even have a real understanding whatsoever. But as long as it's not a Jew doing it, it's either cool, exotic, or mysterious. Or perhaps it's out of a certain respect, you know, that we respect all different ways of life. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to check into everything. We'll respect it, we'll study it, and we'll even adopt it. But all these exotic, strange, mysterious things, it's all okay as long as it's by the gun. But on a Jew, the kind of mysterious things that Jews do, that's not acceptable. Rabbi Kamenetsky wants to suggest means to say that yes, there will be Jews who are going to stray after the actions of non-Jews that make no sense whatsoever. And it's going to happen. You know why? Why is it going to be enticing? Because it's the non-Jew who's doing it. And therefore it becomes exotic or cool, mysterious, and they're going to go after it. And the Torah says, B'chukaisayim, don't go after their chukim. But rather, as the Pasuk then says, as Mishvatai Tasu, you shall do my laws, v'chukaisay tishvu l'chaspahem, and my statutes you shall follow. You want to follow something mysterious? You know, you have the mysterious things in your own heritage. You don't have to stray somewhere else in order to be able to check out something that may be mysterious and different. But the Torah is telling us, so that's how he wants on the Chukaisayim. The Chukaisayim is referring to things, actions that we don't understand. And they're actually to understand because we really don't. They're strange. They're odd. But people will stray after them because, hey, if other people are doing it, if non-Jews are doing it, there must be something to it. It's something that entices people for some reason. It's part of the Yetzirah to follow the Gentile world. The Torah tells us, don't follow that. Follow the chukim of the Torah. Follow those mysterious laws that are part of your heritage. And when you follow those and study those, you'll see how beautiful they are, even if we don't understand the reasons behind them. Okay, anybody want to make any kind of comment on this?
Let me unmute.
Okay.
I'm unmuting all. Go ahead if you have any questions.
To some thoughts on Parshas Kedoshim. And Parshas Kedoshim, we have in Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yud Zayin, chapter 19, verse 17, Vaisista es achicha belvavecha. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. Haicheach teichiach asam isecha. You shall surely rebuke your friend. Vaisisa alav chait. And do not bear or carry upon him chait a sin. So we're going to focus now on these last couple of words. where the word where the pasuk says, "V'loisisa alav chait," do not carry on him a sin. What do those words mean exactly? So we're going to go through a couple of commentaries about what that means. Okay, so Rashi tells us that what that means is like this. It's a continuation from the first part of the pasuk. The first part of the pasuk says, "Hayicheach terchiach asam yisecha," you shall rebuke your friend. And on that, the Torah says, "V'loisis alav chait," do not bear on him a sin. Rashi says those words mean, "V'loisal bin es panav barabin," do not publicly embarrass him. When you are about to rebuke him, and whatever the context may be, he's done something wrong. Maybe he did something wrong to you. He's done something wrong in general. There is a mitzvah, "V'icheach teichiach," you shall rebuke your friend. "V'loisis alav chait," don't bear because of him a sin. Don't have it that the rebuke you gave to him brings a sin upon you, because as you were rebuking him, you probably embarrassed him. That's what the pasuk is coming to say. The fact that you're coming to rebuke him does not give you license to embarrass him. So, aichiach aichiach, rebuke your friend, but I see salav chait, do not bear because of him a sin. The sin is not, the word chait, the sin in the pasuk, don't bear a sin, don't carry a sin, is not, and the word olav is not going on the sinner, on him, not going on the person that you're performing, the person you're rebuking. Rather, it's going on you, the rebuker. You're given a command, rebuke your friend. And you shall not carry olav, not on him, because of him, a sin. Don't bear a sin because of him, because you embarrassed him as you rebuked him. That is the way Rashi learns these words. According to these words, don't translate as don't bear on him a sin, but don't bear because of him a sin on you. Now I'm going to share with you how the Kli Yakar explains this. But before, I just want to share with you how the Kli Yakar, a comment that he says on the first part of the pasuk. The first half of the pasuk that we just read reads, you shall not hate your friend in your heart. Now, and then it says, you shall rebuke your friend. What's the connection between the two? So the Kli Yakar learns it in the following way. He says that the connection between not hating someone and rebuking is because, kibizman sha'ava metzuya b'Yisrael, when love exists amongst Jewish people, kol echa b'taybasa shachaberi chafetz. Everyone wants the best for someone else. If you love someone else, you want the best for them. So if there is peace and harmony amongst the Jewish people, you want the best for each other. And that's when you're going to rebuke someone that he shouldn't stumble in sin. Because sin is the worst thing that can happen to someone. So if you're trying to, if you love someone and you want their benefit, you're going to rebuke them so they shouldn't continue sinning. Because again, you shall rebuke your friend as a mitzvah, that if somebody's doing something wrong, you rebuke them. You try to get them back on the right path. Okay? But when Jews don't like each other, then you're not going to rebuke him. Rather, on the contrary, you tell the sinner, oh, you did good, you're doing fine. You know why? You know why you're telling him he's doing the right thing? Not only are you not rebuking him, you're telling him he's doing the right thing, because the contrary, you want Hashem to punish him. You want calamity to befall him for his sins, because you want his downfall, because you don't like him. And the Kli Yakar bemoans the fact that this kind of dislike amongst people, and therefore not wanting someone's betterment, but actually to look to hope for their downfall, is something that has gripped the Jewish people since the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash, that was caused by sin aschinim, unwarranted hatred. And he says, and it's still amongst us. And and this continues to spread, and until Hashem will have mercy and remove our hearts of stone from within our midst. Okay, so that's the first comment of the Kli Yakar. The beginning of the pasuk that says, don't hate your friend, and then it says, rebuke your friend. There's a connection between the two. Don't hate your friend. If you don't hate your friend, then you'll rebuke, because you want him, you want things, you want your, you desire that things go well for him. But if you do hate him, you're not going to rebuke him. On the contrary, you're going to tell him he does great, because you want him to have a down point, when Hashem to punish him, because you dislike him. That's the connection between the first two halves of the pasuk. And then, the Kli Yakar, now I'll share with you that the Kli Yakar says on these words, L'sisa l'abchei. What does it mean? You shall rebuke your friend, L'sisa l'abchei, and do not bear upon him a sin. Says the Kli Yakar, Mechlal shem lo'yichichai, seichichai. From here we deduce that if you don't rebuke him, then his sin will be put on you. Now, that means that the Kli Yakar understood the words of Leisisa Lavchei, do not bear upon him a sin. Doesn't mean that you're putting some kind of sin on him. It means don't bear upon yourself a sin because of it. So according to the Kli Yakar, rebuke your friend and don't bear a sin on yourself because of him. Connection being, if you rebuke, you won't bear a sin upon yourself. If you don't rebuke, you're going to bear upon yourself a sin. You're going to bear upon yourself a sin because of him. What sin? His sin. The sin that you didn't rebuke. Because you didn't rebuke him, that sin is going to be on you. And you should not bear because of him a sin. By not rebuking, you're going to bear a sin. Why? Because not only did you not rebuke him, but that sin is going to now be your responsibility. Writes the Kli Yakar. This is because all Jews are Arevim, which we translate as responsible. But actually the word Arev means a cosigner. You lend somebody money and you get someone to cosign. So that cosigner knows if the borrower doesn't pay, I'm going to have to pay. I'm going to be responsible. The cosigner sees that the borrower is blowing his money and he's not going to be able to pay back. What does he do? He rebukes the guy. Because of the fear of the responsibility that he bears. Unless he's going to have to pay for it. So to the responsibility that we bear for each and every Jew, that is the cause for rebuking. Meaning, because we are responsible for each other. We bear responsibility for each other. If someone is going to do a sin, it's going to be possible that we will be responsible for it and we will suffer the consequences from it. Why? Because we're an Arif. Because we're a cosigner. And a cosigner means that we have to make sure to stop him, just as a cosigner doesn't want to have to be responsible. We don't want to be responsible for someone else's sin because we didn't rebuke them. V'im eina mekabla. Now, if you go ahead and you rebuke the person and he doesn't accept, as I know who he meant, then you're clean. Then you're off. Then you're off the hook. Ki ein shiras hadin naisin sheyizbo echad ba'ar chaveiroi sheyrib reshusay. It's not right that I'm responsible for someone that I can't control. But for this, the Jewish people are responsible. That in a situation where you can protest, you can stop the person, and you don't, then you're also going to be responsible and be taken into account and bear the responsibility for his sin. Okay? So according to what the Kli Yakar is saying is that we are cosigners. Every one of us are cosigners for the other one when it comes to our behavior, our fulfillment of Torah. And our responsibility, we're a cosigner in as much that we're responsible to stop the other person from doing what's wrong. We're a cosigner in as much is that we have to make sure that someone else doesn't do something that will make them liable. Because if that does happen, then they become liable. then we'll be liable for that. Because our liability is, if we can stop someone and we don't stop someone, we're liable. That's our responsibility. That's our co-signer. That is what we owe. We owe, we are the co-signer, we're responsible that if we could have stopped someone and we don't, we're not responsible for that. If the person doesn't accept our rebuke, so done, we're off the hook. We can't be held responsible for something that's not within our control. But if something is within our control and we don't do it, then we are held like a co-signer. We are not responsible for that other person does. And we will, could chas v'shalom, bear the effects of that. And he brings down a famous mashal, famous parable that is brought down about a person who was on a ship. And he was standing at a certain part of the ship. And he starts drilling a hole in the bottom of the ship. And people said to him, what are you doing? The man says, what do you want? This is my area. I'm standing in my area. Okay, let's say it's my cabin, right? And in my cabin, I'm drilling a hole in my cabin. What's it have to do with you? So they say to him, you fool. The hole that you draw in your cabin is going to flood the whole ship. It's going to sink the whole ship. That's the same idea when it comes to a person's sin. If a person is sinning and we don't stop them, then we can all sink. We're all going to be responsible. It's the same thing in that parable. If you don't stop the guy from drilling the hole in his cabin, the whole ship is going to get flooded. Everyone's going to be affected the same way. If someone is about to sin and you don't stop him when you could, then the damage that he causes because you didn't stop him can affect you also. You'll be held responsible for that also. So according to the Kli Yakar is again telling us a very important lesson about what it means to be responsible for one another when it comes to our every person's fulfillment of the mitzvahs of the Torah, every person's proper behavior. And the end of the pasuk that says, "Lesisa alav chait, you shall not bear a sin on him," again, would seem to mean don't bear a sin because of it. Because of him, because of the sin that he did, that you didn't rebuke, you can bear a sin. So you shall rebuke, and then you won't bear a sin because of him, because of his actions. Okay, that's how the Kli Yakar learns. So both according to Rashi and according to the Kli Yakar, do not bear a sin, like some of chay, do not bear a sin upon him, means don't bear a sin because of him. According to Rashi, it's because you may have embarrassed him. And according to the Kli Yakar, it's bearing a sin because of him if he sinned and you didn't stop him from sinning when you could have. Now, the Aruch Chaim has a different explanation, and this explanation is also, I saw the Ramban says it. And the Aruch Chaim says like this. And it's the way he explains the pasuk, as we're going to see, based on the time we have left, we're going to see that it's the way that many of the commentaries explain the whole pasuk together. And again, the pasuk reads, "Vayisistas achicha belvavecha, you shall not hate your friend in your heart. Vayicheach tachiach asamisecha, you shall rebuke your friend. Vayisisa lavchei, and not bear a sin upon him." So says the Aruch Chaim, Pirish, this means, if your brother, your fellow Jew, something was caused by him, that because of that, you dislike him. He did something to you that caused you to dislike him. Don't keep the hatred in your heart. Don't keep it to yourself. But rather, with your mouth, speak out of him and rebuke him for what he brought about. That's what it means, Aichiach. So, don't hate your friend in your heart, rather, rebuke him. He did something that's causing you to dislike him. Don't keep it in. Don't keep it in. Speak to him. Let him know that you feel it's wrong what he did to you. And then it says, and don't bear upon him a sin. Pirish meaning, do not decide definitively that which was caused through your brother was actually done with wickedness. And that the sin is still basically there sorry, but he didn't have bechatei, and he's still remaining in a sinful state. Bechatei amas hashichmai, with his sin laden on his shoulder. Al tiedana say lekavzchus. They give him the benefit of the doubt. They say chichenu, rebuke him. And when you rebuke him, one of two possible things is going to happen. He'll explain what he did, and you'll realize he didn't mean anything wrong. Maybe he didn't do anything wrong. Or when you speak to him, he'll regret what he did. And then he won't do it again. And now he's back to being your friend. So according to the Arachayim, the words "Lasisa love chait," do not bear a sin upon him, means basically, do not bear a sin upon him. My understanding of the translation would be according to him, do not put sin on him. Meaning, he's done something wrong. Something came about that to you appears that he wronged you or caused something wrong to you. The Torah says, rebuke him. You might say, why should I rebuke him? He couldn't care less. He's not interested. That's what it means. Don't bear a sin upon him. Don't decide that he's not going to listen to your rebuke because the sin is still on him. Because he did something wrong and the sin is still there. He's still a sinner. He couldn't care less. Don't be that way. But rather, as Aruch Haim says, give him the benefit of the doubt and go and discuss it with him. And who knows what could happen? What could happen is that he's going to explain himself why he did what he did, or he's going to apologize. So according to the Aruch Haim, do not bear a sin upon him, means you should rebuke him and don't decide not to rebuke and don't put a sin upon him. Don't lay sin upon him. Don't lay the responsibility of sin upon this person in the sense that he did the sin, and the sin is still on him, and he couldn't care less, so why should I bother even talking to him? Don't be that way. Rebuke him, and don't put the sin upon him. Don't decide that the evil that he's only interested in, the evil that he did, and I'm not going to bother rebuking him. Rather, rebuke him, and who knows, things can really work out very well. So according to the Aruch Haim, Sisa Lav Chait doesn't mean don't bear a sin because of him, but don't bear a sin upon him. Don't put a sin upon him. Don't say that he's still in this sinful state, and therefore there's no point of rebuke. Now again, I'm going to share with you a interesting explanation from Mordechai Kamenetsky in his book, More Parsha Parables. And he says something similar. And he says a beautiful story with the Chafetz Chaim. And he says the Chafetz Chaim was traveling through Poland, Lithuania and Russia to sell his works, and he entered an inn in Vilna and beheld a disturbing sight. Again, I'm reading to you from his book. A burly young man was about to devour a roasted and stuffed hen that lay on his plate. A tall stein overflowing with cold brew sat next to the sanctuary fowl. All of a sudden, the man picked up the entire hen and stuffed it in his mouth. Washing down his meal with a giant cup of beer, he left the stein nearly empty. The Chafetz Chaim had never seen a Jewish person eat like that, let alone without a bracha. The sage turned to the innkeeper and inquired, "Tell me a little about this man. I'd like to talk to him." "Oh," the host smirked while waving his hand in disgust. "There's nobody to talk to. This young man never learned a day in his life. The cantonists captured him when he was 11, and he served in the Russian army for 15 years. The cantonists were young Jewish boys that were snatched to the Russian army, torn away from their families, and torn away from Judaism. He hardly observes any mitzvahs. It's truly amazing that he is concerned with eating kosher." And the innkeeper smiled, "But I'm sure I can count on him for a three-course meal every Thursday night." The Chafetz Chaim was neither shocked nor amused. He simply walked over to the former soldier and shook his greasy hand warmly. After a sincere greeting, the Chafetz Chaim introduced himself and spoke, "I heard that you actually survived the cruel Russian army of Tsar Nicholas. I am sure that many times the terrible officers tried to convert you, or at least force you to eat non-kosher. yet you remained a steadfast Jew. Tears welled in the Chabad's eyes as he continued talking. I only wish that I would be guaranteed a place in the world to come as you will be. What strength, what fortitude. You have withstood harshest tests in the sages of old. The soldier looked up from his plate and tears welled in his eyes too. He leaned over and kissed the hand of the elderly sage. And the Chabad's Chaim continued, I am sure that if you get yourself a teacher and continue your life as a true Torah observant Jew, there will be no one in this world who is as fortunate as you. And according to Rabbi M.M. Yasher, the biographer of the Chabad's Chaim, the soldier became a pupil of the Chabad's Chaim, then she became a great son. Okay. So let's think about this story a little bit. So what do you think? What the Chabad's Chaim told this soldier, was it true? Was it true that this soldier was, you know, that they tried to force him to eat non-kosher and he remained a steadfast Jew? What do you think? True or not? Anybody want to respond?
Yeah, I think it was true. It was a miracle.
How did he know?
Well, he knew about what happened in the army of Nicholas, and he knew how tough it was, and the fact that the boy or the man wanted a kosher meal once a week, it's a truly remarkable achievement.
Okay, that is true. Is that enough of a proof to say that while he was in the army, he only ate kosher?
No, it's not. It's,
or it's not, right?
It's
seemingly
not.
It's not.
Yeah.
True, Boris, you're right. As the innkeeper said, there's something very unique about the fact that he even bothered having a kosher meal. We all know kosher food costs more money than non-kosher food.
Right.
So there is clearly something here. There is something that maybe would lend itself to possibly say that. But again, the way he's writing the story, it sounds like, you know, he seemed to say it very seriously that, you know, they must have tried, but you stayed strong. I mean, you know, maybe, but did that really happen? So, I mean, Kamenetsky brings down something very interesting. And he brings down, there's a pasuk in Mishlei that reads, he who acclaims evildoers as righteous will be cursed, but those who admonish will be blessed. Meaning, if you tell an evildoer you're a tzaddik, you're righteous, you'll be cursed. If you admonish, if you give rebuke, you'll be blessed. So he cites from Shlomo Alkevitz that explain that the two verses work together. They teach that although false flattery is abhorrent, meaning to tell an evildoer you're a tzaddik is you deserve to be cursed for that, but when it is used to admonish by finding the good in those who have strayed, it is to be recommended. It basically, it sounds like if somehow or another you can make up things a little bit, right? You can make him more righteous than he is, but through that you'll be able to truly admonish him, then it's okay. You can't tell an evildoer you're righteous to say, yeah, you're really righteous. But if somehow or another you can make the evildoer bring out some kind of righteousness about him, right? Which my impression from these words is, it may not even be so true. The same way it's not true when you're telling him he's a tzaddik, you may not be so true about telling him he's some kind of a tzaddik when you're admonishing him, but somehow or another, but if you can use that to bring out the good in him, then that should be, that's the way you can, that you're allowed to admonish that way.
I don't disagree with the general premise, but as Boris says, in this particular case, I think there is nothing false in the statement. The people, the Cantonists, I mean, this is pretty much true that what they went through and survived and become Jewish. There's a similar story Beryl Wine says. His father got up during the class when he saw someone dressed totally inappropriately come in, and he got up and talked to him like a great tzaddik, and people say, who is that? He said, just the Cantonists who came back to the community.
Fine, but here the Chabad's Chaim, I'm more focused on the part where the Chabad's Chaim tells him, you know, they try to force you to eat on kosher and you stayed strong. Maybe, yeah, maybe not. But I'm just trying to say that at the end of the day, what the Chafetz Chaim was doing, whether true or not, he was trying to build him up. That's exactly what he was trying to do.
Yeah,
he's trying to build him up.
That's true.
And according to Rabbi Kamenetsky, is trying to say, "Leisisa alav chait," don't bear a sin upon him, means, again, don't, when you're rebuking him, don't just put sin upon him. Don't just look at his negative, but rather look at the positive and use that positive as part of your rebuke to build them up. Because yeah, that would be the best way by which you can bring a person up from the depths of sin.
And in this case, probably you can say everybody else looking at this guy, at his behavior, they don't see anything positive in him.
Right.
Well, it is there, so it's an easy case. It is there, but it's upon you to see that.
Right.
Other people wouldn't.
Right, right. Now again, whether in the army he ate kosher or not, I don't know. And right now though, clearly he's doing something incredible. That number one, he came back to the community, as you said. He's eating a kosher meal, and the Chafetz Chaim also knew that if he can build him up even more, it'll help even more for the rebuke and to bring it back to the right path. And therefore, the Leisis Alav Chait, again, in the context of the Pasuk Hechayach Techiach, you shall rebuke, and don't bear sin, means, I would understand according to this, that when you're rebuking, again, don't just put sin on it. But rather the contrary. When you're rebuking, put something positive on it and build him up. Okay. Now, let's go back, actually, to the first part of the Pasuk, where it says, Leisistas achicha belvavecha, don't hate your brother in your heart. And there are many different opinions as to how to interpret this prohibition and how it applies. And again, we'll see it in the context of how to read the whole pasuk together. So the first thing is we have the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch, Mitzvah Reish Lamed Ches, Mitzvah 238, says the following. That no one should hate in their heart another Jew. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. Okay. And then he continues. I only said this regarding hatred in the heart. But if you show him the hatred, and he knows that you don't like him, you will not be transgressing this prohibition. The prohibition of do not hate your friend in your heart. This prohibition of do not hate your friend in your heart is, as it says, in your heart. Once you express it to him, this prohibition is not there. Other ones may be there. Loisitar, don't bear a grudge. You're going to disobey the possible command to love your friend as yourself. But this specific prohibition, do not hate your friend in your heart, does not apply once you express that hatred. And the chinuch continues, Sherash HaMitzvah Yadua, the understanding of the mitzvah is, Kesinas Halev Garemes Rois Gedoilis, because hatred in the heart causes much evil. Beimene Yadu amongst people, Liyasamad Charevish Ba'achev Ish Bereyu, constant because of the hatred that's kept inside, it causes much strife between people. The Siba V'chol HaMasiris HaNasis Ben HaNashim, when people inform upon each other, that's the cause. The Nidab Chusav HaNemesis Tachlis HaMois Be'enei Kol Bal Seichel. And it should be a despicable trait in the eyes of anybody with any kind of intelligence. Okay. Then he says, so now, the way the Sefer HaChinuch talks is, he says, if you keep the hatred inside, this prohibition applies to you. You let it out, you let it be known to him that you dislike him, no more hate, no more sin. That's it. Just got to let him know that you don't like him. You keep it inside, it's very, that there's a problem. Once you express it, no more prohibition. And based on the reasoning that he gives, that the sin in the heart causes many evils, it would seem, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, that pent up hatred is like, it's a ticking time bomb. You eat yourself up alive so much. It eats you up so much, and that causes all the strife. If you let it out, if you let the person know, either, number one, you've released all that energy, released all that tension and stress. And number two, maybe some good will come out of it. Now, the Rambam also seems to follow this opinion. The Rambam in Hilchos Deis, Perek Vav, chapter 6, Halachas, the paragraphs 5 through 7, Hey through Zayin, says like this, Kal asayne echad mi Yisrael, b'libay, aver b'lay saseh. You hate a fellow Jew in your heart, you transgress the prohibition. Shemar, as it says, v'sistas achicha b'ol b'vecha, do not hate your friend in your heart. They like an alav zelat yishem by maisa. You don't get lashes for this, because there's no act involved. But Yizhira Torah Ella al sinah shebelev. The Torah only warned us about hatred of one's heart. Olamakas chaveiray. If you give your friend a zest, you hit him. Bamacharfay, or you just embarrass him. Apal pishay de rashoy. Even though you're not allowed to do that. Ain't over mishem leisisna. There's no permission or sisna. If you go over to a guy and you give him a whack, you've shown him that you're not happy with him. Well, you may have transgressed a prohibition involved in hitting someone, but you have not transgressed the prohibition of do not hold hatred in your heart. So the Rambam is very clear that the prohibition is not applied once you let it out, once you show it, once you express it, no more prohibition. Now, Rambam continues. Kshiyachta ish le'ish le'yistamenu v'yishtay. If a person sins against another person, you, the victim, should not hate the person and remain silent. Rather, it's a mitzvah for you to let him know. To tell him, why do you do this to me? Why do you sin against me? As the pasuk says, you shall rebuke your friend. And if you ask for forgiveness, you got to forgive him. So according to the Rambam, the Rambam is saying, the way to read the pasuk is, don't hate your friend in your heart. Why would you be hating him? Because he did something wrong to you. Let him know. Let him know. So the Rambam is, when he explains the pasuk, he is putting the two pasukim parts together. Don't hate your friend for what he did to you. Rebuke him. But from the first part of the Rambam, it's pretty clear that although they could be related, they're not necessarily related. Yavle sisna. Don't hold the hatred in your heart. You show it to him, you go and you give him a whack, and you show him you don't like him, you haven't transgressed that prohibition. If you do have something against someone because he did something wrong to you, the Torah says, rebuke him. Because it says the Rambam writes, you see somebody do something wrong, in the midst of bringing him back to the right path. Why? The words in this pasuk. You shall rebuke your friend. So the pshat of the pasuk, the context of the pasuk, which is talking about you did something wrong to you, rebuke, let him know about it. That's the same, that falls under the same category of letting somebody know that they did something wrong, and they didn't do it to you. They did it to somebody else. They did it, they did a sin against Hashem. Hachiach Teichiach is a mitzvah in itself, doesn't just relate back if somebody did something to you. But it doesn't exclude that, because if somebody hurt you, that's also something to rebuke them for. The context of the pasuk says, don't keep the hatred in your heart. If somebody did something wrong to you, let them know about it. At the same time, from the Rambam, it's clear. If you let them know that you're not happy with him, because in the case of the first, the Rambam says, you go and you whack him. That means you let him know that you don't like him. You don't let him, you let him know that you're not happy with him. No more prohibition of, don't hate your friend and your brother in your heart. At the same time, don't just keep it in and don't just whack him, but rather go over to him if he did something wrong to you and explain and ask him why he did it. Okay. I want to conclude with the way the Ramban learns. The Ramban also learns like the Rambam, like we just said from the Rambam. And he says like this. He learns, the mitzvah of rebuke your friend is, if the pasuk starts off and says, do not hate your brother in your heart. When he does to you something that you don't like, but rather rebuke him. Why do you do this to me? and don't bear a sin upon him, l'chasei sin ase b'libcha, to hold that hatred in your heart, l'saginah, not to tell him. Because when you do rebuke him, he's not salach, neither explain, or he'll repent and confess what he did and ask him for forgiveness. So according to the Ramban, now again, the Ramban doesn't say the first part of the Rambam. The Rambam started off and said, if you hold hatred in your heart, you transgress prohibition. Once you let it out, you don't transgress. So the Ramban doesn't say. The Ramban immediately begins. The Pasuk is saying, if somebody did something wrong to you, don't hold it inside. Rather, go over to the person and tell him, why do you do this to me? And don't bear a sin upon him. Which according to the Ramban seems to mean, and again, don't, similar to the Arachayim, and don't put sin on him. Don't make things remain in a way that it seems like he's continuing to sin. But rather, talk to him and hear it out. Maybe he'll explain himself, maybe he'll apologize. So the Birchas Peretz learns in the Ramban that because the Ramban doesn't say the introduction of the Rambam, that according to the Ramban, the whole mitzvah, the whole prohibition, don't hate your friend in your heart, is not about just keeping it in. But rather, it's about, somebody did something wrong with you, don't keep it in, but rather tell him. If you don't tell him, you will transgress, hitting your friend in your heart. But what do you have to do that it shouldn't be considered hatred in your heart? The Ramban says what you have to do is you got to go to them and tell him and ask him or rebuke him. Why did you do this to me? According to the Ramban, if you go over to a guy that did something wrong to you and you give him a whack, that's not enough. That's not enough. Well, I showed him I'm not happy with him. That's not enough. The Torah says when you show him, you got to show him in a way that you're basically you're asking him, why you do this to me? It's not just enough to show him you're not happy. You got to show him you're not happy in the context of asking, why did you wrong me? Only when you do that will you not be transgressing. Don't hate your friend in your heart. Now, which means, so again, that's one difference between the Rambam according to the Berachos Peretz. According to the Berachos Peretz, you just let it out. And according to the Rambam, you let him know you're not happy. It's not in your heart. No more transgression of don't hate your friend in your heart. According to the Rambam, not enough just to let him know that you don't like him. You got to know why. You got to let him know why you don't like him. And you got to let him know why so that you'll be able to possibly work things out. Now, according to the Ramban, what happens if the guy did something wrong to you and you follow what the Torah said? Let him know what's bothering you. Let him know so that, things can work out. Well, you let him know, what he says? Yep, I did it. You want to apologize? No, I don't want to apologize. So maybe now you can dislike him. So according to the way the Ramban's putting everything together, it's very possible. It's very possible that if he basically says, yes, I did this wrong to you, and I'm not interested in apologizing, that means he's basically saying, I'm okay with the sin that I did against you. Well, if he's okay that he sinned against you, guess what? You don't have to like him. You don't have to like him. And also, if let's say, according to the Ramban, that the way the Ramban lays out everything, that it all works together, and the Ramban is saying, don't hate him in your heart because of what he did to you, but rather let him know that he did something wrong to you. What happens if you dislike him not because of the fact that he did something wrong to you? You know why you dislike him? Because he's too successful. You're jealous of it. That's why you dislike him. He didn't do anything wrong. You dislike him because you're jealous. And you go over him and you say, you know what? I can't stand you because you succeed so much and I don't. According to the Ramban, not going to do anything. Not going to help. You have transgressed hating a fellow Jew for no reason. The only time expressing your hatred is going to help, according to the Ramban, at least again the way the Ramban lays this out, is if he did something wrong to you and you let him know that he did something wrong so that you can work it out together. But if you just dislike him because he didn't do anything wrong, you dislike him, well, that's a problem. You have not only transgressed, you have not only disobeyed, to love your friend, you will have transgressed, don't hate your brother. Because in essence, this prohibition is about, includes hating. This prohibition includes hating. It's just that there are circumstances that if you express that hatred to him and let him know it's a hatred because of what he did to you, and you let him know about it, and you try to work it out, oh, okay, then already you brought out the hatred, you're not going to have any kind of prohibition. But if you keep it in, or you're hating him for no reason of his wrongdoing, you have to you'd be transgressing this prohibition. Okay?
Rabbi, question.
Go ahead.
So you're saying that if you let the person know and he doesn't change his way, you're allowed to dislike him. What if he said, if he doesn't admit that he's doing an aveira? He says, I know Torah better than you, and I don't need to go get anybody else's opinion.
Let's see. So basically, he's not denying what he did, but he feels it's not wrong.
Yeah, he's not wrong, yeah.
He's not wrong. And you feel he is wrong.
Yeah. Let's go ask Haman Shalek. He says, no, I'm a Rav myself. I don't need to.
I have to think about that. Good question. I got to think about that. Good point.
I think what also relates to this is that, the prayer before going to bed is to forgive all the sins and fundamentally appreciate everybody. And,
right.
So, every Jew is supposed to say it before going to sleep. And I think that's something is related to this mitzvah.
That is correct. That's correct. Boris, is this recorded?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So then somewhere or another, we gotta help Alex. How do we share this recording?
Yeah, I will send it to Alex and he does the right thing.
Okay, excellent.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody, have a wonderful good night. Thank you for joining. Again, our learning should be a merit for Refuah Shleima, for all those who need a Refuah Shleima, and that we should see Yeshuas and the Hamas for all of Klal Yisrael and the whole world very soon.
Thank you. Amen.
And again, thank you, Boris, for the Zoom meeting.
Thank you. Have a good night, everyone.
Be well.
Good night.